Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
To the United States now, where President Donald Trump's tariff battle has taken another turn, with a federal appeal court ruling his sweeping tariffs can stay in place for now. The decision comes a day after a US trade court said Trump had exceeded his authority and ordered an immediate suspension of tariffs. While addressing the media yesterday, the White House trade advisor Peter Navarro said they would enact tariffs by any means necessary.
The tariffs remain in place. The court told us, they didn't all but tell us, they told us, go do it another way. So you can assume that even if we lose, we will do it another way. And I can assure the American people that the Trump tariff agenda is alive, well, healthy, and will be implemented to protect you, to save your jobs and your factories, and to stop shipping foreign wealth. Our wealth into foreign hands.
So you are working on a plan B, right?
Of course. Now. There's no plan B. It's plan A. Okay?
It's plan A. Now, for more, I'm joined on the line from Washington by Simon Marks, chief correspondent of Feature Story News. Is your head spinning just like ours are spinning over here?
Well, it's just been an extraordinary week, Claire, in which I think Donald Trump has come up relentlessly against the complexities of governing. Mr. Navarro is right. The courts are not telling the Trump administration that they can't impose tariffs, but they are telling Donald Trump that he can't be a dictator. In order to impose those so-called reciprocal tariffs on countries all over the world, including the EU and, of course, Ireland, President Trump reached back to a 1977 law that he claimed allows the president to act unilaterally when a national emergency is taking place. And indeed, the law was enacted in 1977 specifically to deal with economic issues in the event of a national emergency. So he argued he could roll out those reciprocal tariffs in the Rose Garden of the White House, Liberation Day, April the 2nd. You remember that Eurovision Song Contest style event when
yes.
He held those boards up and rattled off the levies that he was going to impose on all of America's trading partners. He decided he could do all of that based on this 1977 national emergency law. And what the International Trade Court in Manhattan has said is, well, hang on a second, there is no national emergency that requires you to put tariffs in place on countries all over the world. You cannot use that law in this way. What they're basically saying is only Congress can implement and regulate tariffs on imports into the United States. So you should have done it by going to Congress with your plans and asking Congress to act. That, of course, flies in the face of a Trump administration that is determined to superannuate the executive power, the power of the presidency. He doesn't want either to spend the time working with Congress, because that's complicated stuff, right? You've got to draft legislation, you've got to chivvy people along to support it, you have to engage in back and forth, even with some Republicans who are going to argue that you're supposed to be the party of free trade, not protectionism. So the court is basically saying you can't act like a dictator. And we're seeing other courts on other issues blocking Donald Trump for exactly the same kind of reason.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you give us a sense of where public opinion is on all of this? I mean, we know what Donald Trump says, that this is a horrible, country-threatening decision by the court, the one that has been paused. But are the public with him on this, or are they very nervous about what tariffs might do to the American economy?
Well, you know, there's no monolithic public, but I think that there is a growing awareness of anxiety about what tariffs are going to do to the economy, because even after Donald Trump declared Liberation Day and told everybody that a new golden age was dawning for America as a result of the imposition of these tariffs, he then subsequently said to Americans, oh, by the way, this Christmas, you're only going to be able to buy two dolls for the kids, not 30, because the prices are going to go up, which, of course, flew in the face of his insistence that tariffs tariffs were not going to be inherently inflationary. I mean, what the court has done, that appeals court, is basically kick all of this into the long grass. It's going to be mid-June before they render a decision about whether that lower court ruling should be upheld. Everything the White House says could then go to the Supreme Court. At the moment, Donald Trump can continue collecting those tariffs, although this really upends negotiations with the EU, negotiations with China, because, of course, all of America's international partners and competitors are saying, well, hang on a second, surely we should wait until the legal action all plays itself out, because who knows what kind of an agreement we may end up needing to negotiate. Mm-hmm. On the issue of public opinion, though, he has fed into the notion that his tariffs are going to be inflationary, and that's definitely unsettling to many Americans.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see what the EU strategy will be now. And I saw on my Wires feed just a little earlier as we were coming on air that the European Union Trade Commissioner, Maro Sefcovic, said that he had another call today with Howard Lutnick, the US Trade Secretary, in a sort of benign statement on X from the Trade Commissioner, the EU Trade Commissioner, saying our time and effort is fully invested as delivering forward-looking solutions remains a top EU priority, staying in permanent contact. Who knows what to say on these calls, though, now?
Well, I think everybody is now just sitting back and waiting to see what happens. I mean, in a sense, it would be a fool's errand to rush into an agreement with the Trump administration and consider the position that the UK finds itself in. Remember, the British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer in that Oval Office speakerphone conversation hailing President Trump after they signed the US-UK economic prosperity deal, which gave some alleviation to the UK's exports of steel, aluminium, and 100,000 cars a year, but kept baseline tariffs in place on all other exports. It was only earlier this week that the UK's ambassador to the United States, Lord Mandelson, made a speech before the Atlantic Council talking about Donald Trump's acute political instincts. Well, the court in Manhattan and a second court that has ruled against these tariffs certainly doesn't think Donald Trump has got acute political instincts. And the EU, China, all the other countries that have been lining up to try and seek alleviation from these tariffs may be best advised just to wait and see whether ultimately the courts deliver a fatal blow to a policy that is at the absolute heart, not just of Donald Trump's economic approaches, it's at the heart of his national security strategy as well. Because remember, he uses these tariffs, you know, to try and bruise Canada into becoming America's 51st state, or to force China, for example, to take action on fentanyl precursors that head into the United States. So it's not just a key pillar of his economic policy that is under threat now, but the policy that underpins his entire approach to foreign policy.
Now, Elon Musk is gone back to his regular day job, isn't he, Simon? And from the get-go, everyone was wondering, when is the bus stop going to happen between Donald Trump and Elon Musk? But it seems that what happened was he was put under huge pressure from Tesla investors to get back to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Politico, the website, was reporting earlier this week that you could hear champagne corks popping throughout the Trump administration's various government departments because so many cabinet members loathed Elon Musk and they were delighted to see the back of him. They may have uncorked the champagne a little bit too early because today, amid all of these reports of a bust-up between Musk and the president, President Trump will welcome Elon Musk back to the White House for what we're told is an Oval Office press conference that the two of them will preside over, no doubt seeking to cement in the minds of the public and the pundits that they are still best buds and that Elon Musk is absolutely supportive of the president's agenda, even though earlier this week he criticized Donald Trump's spending plans, saying they were going to fuel the deficit and undo all the work that he'd done as the head of that so-called Department of Government Efficiency. So this is an uneasy relationship that the two of them have got. Let's see what the body language is like in that news conference in a few hours' time. President Trump knows that he can't completely alienate Mr. Musk because Mr. Musk has got so much money at his disposal that he can choose, if he wants to, next year in 2028, to spend that money politically, and it can be very, very influential.
Mm-hmm. So now, does it hardly matter how much he managed to save with his chainsaw wielding now? Because there are major questions over how efficient his Department of Efficiency actually was.
Yeah, I mean, well, he said he was going to save $2 trillion this year in public expenditure. And even using his own figures, he's come in $1.8 trillion short. I do think it's worth underscoring, though, that, you know, with that chainsaw, he did close government departments. The U.S. Agency for International Development is no longer functioning. The U.S. Institute for Peace is no longer functioning. The Voice of America remains completely shuttered. And he also upended hundreds of thousands of lives of federal government workers who were shown the door on the orders of Elon Musk. Also, he feathered his own nest. I mean, while Tesla's in difficulty, he secured all sorts of new government business while he was the head of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. So I wouldn't cry too many tears for the richest man in the world.
Now, I also wanted to ask you, Simon, about Harvard University, because there has been something of a reprieve in their for them in their battle against Donald Trump's plans to restrict international students. I mean, this has caused such uncertainty for people who are coming from abroad to study in the United States. So what's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, this is another example of the courts drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, you can't act like a dictator to the president of the United States. The US government revoked Harvard's right to recruit international students. They, of course, are also more generally going after foreign students. They've suspended and frozen all interviews for student visas at embassies and consulates all over the world. Well, a court sided with Harvard and said the government doesn't have the power to tell it that it can't recruit foreign students. So that, of course, is now going to make its way through the appeals process. I mean, I think for anyone thinking of sending their kids to an American university, you've now got to engage in a risk assessment, because even if you got the visa, even if you got the place at one of America's storied Ivy League institutions or any other university, say you pony up the $85,000 you're going to need for 1 year of tuition at Harvard or the University of Southern California or any of the others. Well, what happens if Donald Trump suddenly quixotically orders all foreign students out of the United States? You're not going to get your money back. Mm-hmm. So none of this is a great advertisement for American universities seeking to recruit foreign students and foreign talent.
Simon, thank you so much. As always, great to catch up with you. Simon Marks, their chief correspondent of Feature Story News in Washington.